As the morning of the autumnal equinox approaches, people begin to gather at key locations around the world where human ingenuity has created architectural holding places to celebrate our unity with nature and with the traveling path of the sun's rising. Sacred sites from the Puebloan Casa Rinconada in New Mexico to the Mayan Temple of Chichen Itza in Mexico, from the ancient monuments of Lough Cru in Ireland to the 5,000-year-old Mnyadhra Temple on the island of Malta, pictured on the screens. You see, although we say that the sun rises in the east, the reality is that the exact placement of the sun's rising varies across a wide expanse of the horizon from the extreme ends of the two solstices of summer and winter. And actually, in actuality, only twice a year does the sun rise exactly due east, and that happens at the two equinoxes of spring and autumn. This time of year, as the Earth's northern hemisphere turns from summer to autumn, we have moved from what was the longest day of the summer solstice to a parity of day and night at the equinox. Day and night are exactly balanced, with the plane of the equator passing through the center of the sun. And the surety of this cycle, combined with the human ability to note and plan and build, have resulted in amazing structures that celebrated what were thought to be auspicious occasions. The equinoxes, those times of 50-50, night and day, where there is knowledge that things will be different, where we pass from one period to another, leaning into a new cycle, into new possibilities. In Cambodia, at Angkor Wat, the largest set of religious structures in the world, the entire 400-plus acre complex has been engineered to align with the rising of the sun at the equinox. Of course, the actual place of the sun's rising is at the horizon, but the builders of Angkor Wat wanted to celebrate not only this precision, but their own ability to align their ingenuity with that calibration. For as the sun rises, it does so in an arc. The planners and builders realized that by the time it would be visible at the apex of a monument meant to celebrate it, the sun would be 5 degrees off due east. The ancient people of Cambodia therefore set the entire complex 5 degrees askew, allowing for the amazing spectacle of the sun appearing to emerge from behind the central temple's tower and balance on its tip. It is a breathtaking display of human know-how combined with a reverence for the cosmos. Tonight, Rosh Hashanah, which means the head of the year, begins a celebration of a new year of covenant and relationship in Jewish communities. Here you see some of the symbols of this day. The ram's horn, known as the shofar, whose blasts give the day its original Hebrew name of Yom Teruah. And the apples that are part of this season, along with honey, to augur the sweetness of the year to come. It's not the only new year in the Hebrew calendar. In fact, Rosh Hashanah is the first day of the seventh month of the year, measured in a different way. But unlike other new years that commemorate kings' reigns or harvest cycles, Rosh Hashanah's new year is the civil and spiritual anniversary of humankind's relationship to creation. And as such, I don't think it's an accident that it falls right around the time of the autumnal equinox. Of course, the Hebrew people had a calendar based on the moon, but they devised a leap month system so as to ensure that the beginning of their spiritual year would always line up with the new moon closest to the autumnal equinox, because since humans became humans with an ability to plan and adjust to seasonal imperatives, they celebrated and made sacred those times of the year associated with cyclical change, and by extension, with the realization that humans are uniquely able to effect change in their own lives, often in tandem with communities of accountability, but dependent on self-maintenance, plans of self-improvement, and perseverances of purpose. The 10 days, starting with Rosh Hashanah and ending with Yom Kippur, are commonly known as the days of awe, Yamim Noraim. Now, in a culture where awesome can be the response to things on a continuum of banality, I think I can safely say that we've lost track of what that word actually means. Awe, a mixed emotion of reverence and wonder inspired by authority, genius, great beauty, sublimity, or might, but also dread. In fact, the word awe in English comes from the Gothic word agis, for fear. A new day begins this evening, a new year, the year 5780. And so begin days of introspection, self-examination, and prayer. The holiday gives us a chance to reaffirm who and what we are, and to make an intentional choice to work on growth for ourselves in order that together we might bring more love and healing and grace into a world that so often seems broken. Rosh Hashanah, a reminder to us all that change is possible. Change is more than possible. It is a requirement for a life well lived. One of the structuring metaphors of the days of awe is the concept that there are books into which our lives are written down, added to, each year in preparation for the next. This concept of writing in books is the source of the common greeting during this time, L'shana tova, tikatev b'tichatenu, or may you be inscribed and sealed for a good year. It is held that while the new installment of each person is inscribed on Rosh Hashanah, it is not sealed until Yom Kippur. The 10 days are therefore an opportunity to give a good thinking through to one's life, the good and the not so good. In my own life, this past year has been filled with new challenges and new pathways forward, not the least of which has been entering into this experiment of co-ministry with you all. Last October, I was ordained to the ministry, and a couple of months ago, I finished up a long period of my life in which I was always scurrying toward the finish line of earning my PhD. Of course, one has to be driven to reach such accomplishments, but in doing so, I didn't make enough room in my life for many of the things that bring me joy. So I had to change my behavior with intention in order to nourish my soul. In October's congregational newsletter, I mentioned that I'm welcoming back three things in particular: being in ongoing relationship with the people I really care about, reading novels, and getting more singing back into my world. Yeah, I like that one. What things have you been neglecting? Things that bring you joy, things that inspire you to be the best version of yourselves. Now is the time for turning the page and to lay the groundwork for the coming year, the coming version of you. I recently read a short piece by Jewish poet Marcia Falk that both addresses this time of year and embodies what is possible for humans, having a new way to conceive of what we see and experience. This is by Marcia Falk, Leaves. Leaves don't fall, they descend. Longing for earth, they come winging. In their time, they'll come again. For leaves don't fall, they descend. On the branches, they will again be green and fragrant, cradle swinging. For leaves don't fall, they descend. Longing for earth, they come winging. I love this new way of conceiving what is thought of as a slow dying leaves falling to the ground, almost like a defeat or the end of the line. So many things in our own lives can seem like walls or defeats when they actually represent new opportunities. So too with the leaves, which in Falk's rendering form an intentional part of the continuity of life and which descend to enrich the ground that forms a part of the cycle that will bring new leaves of green in the months ahead. What dead ends in your life could be looked at anew, seen for the new life that they may make possible? Now is the time for turning the page and for embracing a new way of seeing. Among the customs of the days of awe, it is common to seek reconciliation with people, people we may have wronged or people who may have wronged us, to ask for forgiveness and to forgive. On Yom Kippur, the WAGO, or WAGO, We Are Growing Older group, has invited me to speak to them on making amends, and I invite you to join us a week from Wednesday in the community room to go more deeply into reconciliation. But the underlying principle is the same, that now is a time to create space in one's life for change, to cease to be inhibited by nagging pangs of guilt or the vendettas that constrict our minds, and instead to liberate ourselves to live anew, back in relationship with loved ones, or at least more at peace with the past, so that sparks of new life can leap from the smoldering embers of regret. Who in your life can you imagine forgiving? Who might you speak to about claiming responsibility for your actions and asking them for forgiveness? Now is the time for turning the page and seeking reconciliation. Beyond freeing ourselves from the past and having goals for the days to come, however, living into the promise that Rosh Hashanah gives us the freedom to imagine will take practice. And there are practices we can put in place that will enhance our joy and well-being. I mentioned the three practices of friendly gatherings, reading, and singing that I've committed to. But the very fact that I speak to you this morning as your co-minister is evidence of many other practices I am engaging in order best to serve you as co-leader of the ministries of this congregation. And these next days, I'm aware of two practices that are offerings of this community that you might take on in order to live into the Rosh Hashanah spirit. First, I'm pleased that at least 8 groups have formed to be covenant circles. These are circles of members and friends that meet once monthly to engage with our congregational themes. This month's theme has been expectation. And today we are talking about upending previous expectations we may have had of ourselves in favor of new modalities of being that just might lead us into feeling like we belong to one another. October's theme is belonging. Covenant circles are not discussion groups so much as circles of engaged listening that allow connections to be forged with others in a caring environment. And they take practice to yield their fruits. You can still join into one of these micro communities. Just let Lisa Arcolio or me know that you are interested, and we'll get you placed in a circle that meets your scheduled needs and to which you can belong. Second, this coming Sunday, October 6th, another practice begins that everyone is invited to join. Now, the Path to Membership series is conceived as a way for newcomers to get connected to the congregation, to Unitarian Universalism, and to the ministries of the community. But all are welcome to join this 4-session group of seekers. Perhaps it's been a long time since you became a member, and you'd like a refresher. Maybe you'd just like to get the spark back into your UU identity. Maybe you've just lost track of the many ministries available for you to join here. There's a sign-up sheet on the administrative office door, or again, contact Lisa Arcolio or me. And let your new year be a vow to reforge your own path to membership in this congregation. Now is the time for turning the page and to set in motion new practices. Recently, I saw a production at the MacArthur Theater in Princeton of Gloria, a sort of happening or rally in the form of a meditation on the life of Gloria Steinem, in which we are taken on a journey of an ordinary woman swept into extraordinary relationships because she allowed her passion for women's empowerment to lead her outside of herself, and in the process created a wave of action on behalf of women around the world. It put me into a mindset of thinking about systemic processes of which I am a part, and the idea that through a new sense of intention, I might engage in an examination of ways I am complicit in allowing systems that harm to proceed unfettered. Gloria ended with an exhortation not to be overwhelmed by the state of the world, but to begin putting into practice a new set of behaviors that can put us on paths to change. And to begin that by doing something expected, they suggested, the very next day. An action, however small, that you had not expected to do, but which would put you into contact with mechanisms of change and transformation. The character playing Steinem's mother said that the action could be as small as saying, "I'm speaking now, please allow me to finish my sentence." Not so easy, perhaps. Well, the next morning, I was due to be part of a communion service, followed by a lunch with some students. The lunch was canceled, and so I found myself in Princeton with just enough time to get to the climate strike rally due to start at 12:30. When I got there, I discovered what those of you who attended the evening rally in Red Bank found out: UUs were in full force. Did my being there make a change in the world? Well, it made a change in me. And that's the point of Rosh Hashanah. We step back and look at the year that was, see what we'd like to be different, turn the page, and take steps to include ourselves in making a change. As I've said, those changes are not instantaneous. They take perseverance and are often incremental, sometimes not happening quickly enough for us to fully notice. Not engaging change in ourselves can blind us to what's happening outside of us, and that can be dangerous, for when systems begin to stray away from their original intent, they too can do so in small increments, and before we know it, it may be too late. Or at least we can have the sense that the problems are just too big for any small effort we might make. Climate change comes to mind, but something tells me that this coming year we'll have a lot of opportunities to show up in support of our constitutional democratic process. As I look at this past year, I am acutely aware of the precariousness of democracy as a way of life that honors individual choice, access to voting, and greater inclusiveness. Now is the time to turn to a new page in the book of our lives. I know I preached somewhat to the choir on this last point. Perhaps what some of us really need is rest. I know that a lot of you are so active in so many causes, and your actions are so often thankless, that perhaps this Rosh Hashanah, you need to step back and allow yourselves time to breathe going forward. Others may have a penchant for scheduling themselves within an inch of their lives, and perhaps you, like the journeyer in the story Wisdom this morning, need to release yourself to allow for more spontaneity. Or perhaps, like me, reading a novel or singing a song or salves your spirit requires. What's important is that whatever you do this coming year, it have meaning. Our centering words this morning from writer, dissident, and first president of a burgeoning Czech Republic, Václav Havel, reminded us that hope is not a conviction that something will turn out well, but a certainty that something has a meaning regardless of how it turns out. I hope that when you come to this meeting house, you are able to access meaning, that you are able to place your life in a context larger than yourself. The lesson of Rosh Hashanah is one that humans have been celebrating since they became aware that intentionality and change were possible in this universe. We can turn the page, and we can encourage one another in that turning. Now is the time for turning, for laying the groundwork, for embracing a new way of seeing, for seeking reconciliation, for essaying new practices, and for joining in movements for change that will at least guarantee a change in us. May it be so for all of us this new year, and may it be a sweet one.
Joel and I will be playing a concert version of the Kol Nidre. It means all vows. It's an ancient melody, and we play it this morning both because of its place in the high holidays and also to remember Howard Dean, who always sang it for us so beautifully.